Good morning. Thank you for coming out so early this morning. I had a transition between adult health and to public health because I found all my adult health patients didn't have their needs met, and we were meeting as nurses, and our team were. So that's whenever I changed tracks several years ago and went strictly to public health. And now I'm a public health educator. Today's focus is on RAP, Relatives as Parents Program. I want to like to see who in here has ever heard of RAP, besides my cohorts. Okay, good to know where my audience is. I have no disclosures. No financial disclosures. Relatives as Parents Program is a program that came out of the Brookdale Foundation starting in the late 90s. I'm going to give you a little overview and scope of it, and we're going to touch on parts of a program evaluation that I did for a RAP in five counties in South Central Mississippi. This Relatives as Parents Program is a 501c3. It has been organized from that fashion from the very beginning. They have some background with it. It has started in one county, branched to another, and as a need was found and money was available and staff were available, has gone to five counties. As I show you the data as we proceed, one of the counties was started right about the time in 2005 that Katrina hit and was only viable for a very short period of time and has not resumed. So some of the data is really concentrated more on four counties because of the viability issue. As far as keywords and things that are appropriate for this, whenever you think about relatives as parents, different relatives, it could be commonly a grandparent, but could be any other relative within the context of a family, could take custody of a child, and this can be actual physical custody where you're just doing day-to-day life. It may be legal custody, or you just may be the custodial parent of this child. So a custodial parent is one that has the physical custody and the day-to-day. Informal, you may just have acquired them. You know, you picked up the slack whenever they need it. So you have no legal connection with them. It's not court-ordered either. As far as words that come up in the literature, kinship care is one of the common ones that you'll see, and that's any relatives that serve as foster parents for these children, and they can be through informal or formal state mandated custody. The volunteer part of custody is when there's no court order with it. And with this whole program, there's many changes that have occurred over time. So some of the, as the changes have come up legally and with needs of the program itself has changed. The original goal and mission are very congruent. This is an organization under an organization. And so there is an organization called Pine Belt Association for Families. And within it, there's about six other things that are there. Home visitation, some child underage minor programs that are there, after school programs, literacy programs. But this is one of the specific for the adults, the relatives as parents. So they address the needs of the community, and they support the growth and development of these families across the lifespan. Some of the other things that they, when you look at what an organization's mission or vision, they talk about strong families and strong communities go hand in hand. They support multi-generational strategies that are needed to address the issues that concern this population. They want to progress to be flexible, so they haven't locked themselves down with their mission and their goal, and to do the responses that are needed for different emerging needs. And then that families don't just happen. So we know that from our practice, families change, but with these particular families, they may be thrown together, and it's not necessarily the desire of the child or the grandparent initially, but they make their own family. So this is to improve the quality of life around PETAL. That was the initial part of Pine Belt Association of Families. So when they added kinship care, they also had to change their mission and goals. So that, again, they were able to change. So part of this is that whenever we started the evaluation plan, this was done at the request of an executive director. It also helped me meet some of my DMP requirements for graduation, so it was a win-win for all of us. They wanted to know what were the demographics of their participants. They could name off their names, they could tell you where they live, but they didn't really know a lot of things about them because the information was stored on a form in the closet, you know, part of the information on the computer had been lost in a move with a staff member who accidentally hit the delete button on all of the files. So I went back and went to the books and started finding some of this information. But they wanted to know what was similar and what was different. The executive director could tell us a lot of things, but we couldn't get some firm numbers on it. And they wanted to know outcomes of these programs in these five underserved areas. And then they wanted to know change. This program started about 11 years ago in this area, and grandparents have changed, the minors have changed, so they wanted to know what do we need to do to better serve our population. So I took the pre-seed-pro-seed model that's been out since been about 35 years now. It's been used for health promotion and health education evaluation, and I took aspects of that and looked at different aspects of it. So I'm going to report on some of these that we have here. This is a stepped guide for evaluation. It has a formative part of it and different aspects of the evaluation. And with all our, whenever you look at programs, one of the things that's always been pressed on us with outcomes is begin with the end in mind. So I went back, even though I was doing program evaluation, and looked at aspects of what she wants to do, what has been done, and what's the present. So when I looked at my grandparents and to see what's going on with them, we took census data. And the 2000 census is the first time that grandparents were polled and reported as living with children or actually primary caregivers of children. So I took the five counties, and you can see this is the part of the national data, and then we have the different five counties here of where we are in they're actually living with grandchildren under 18. So when you Covington County and Smith County are very close proximity, so very different with the number they're actually living with them, 52 versus 400. Forest County is a larger county, about 1,700. Harrison County is one of the counties impacted by Katrina. So when you look at their numbers at 4,600 and know now, too, that particular county group did not stay viable, that's a big red marker for me. When we look at when those grandparents that are actually responsible for their own grandchildren that are 18, the numbers change then. So they're not just residing with the children, they are the primary caregiver. So numbers went up in all of them. In the county I reside in Forest County, 1,000 grandparents take care of children. I had no idea that was happening. I had programs for adults that I was involved with. I had school age problems. Never did I realize the overlap between those. In Mississippi, we have almost 86,000 grandparents living with children, but look at the next one. 50,000 grandparents are responsible for grandchildren. This is the 2000 census. We are waiting with bated breath for the next census, hopefully the end of January, first part of February, to know what the next ones are. We look to see, we know that where our grandparents were 10, 11 years ago. Some of our grandparents, because they've been in the program for 11 years, they're 11 years older, and they might have been caring for a 2-year-old, and now they're 83, and they have a 12-year-old. So you think you have fun with your teenager? Try being 81, 2, or 3 and taking care of a teenager. So we have a lot of different issues. So one of the areas I just wanted to show you is that we looked at what was the mortality, and I did the morbidity as well, but this was the one I chose to put up to show the markers. We are a state that's usually 48, 49th, or 50 in health indicators, and we've got the top three there. Cardiovascular, heart, malignant neoplasm comes up as a mortality on all five counties here with the adults. And when we look for three counties, excuse me, when we look for the top three, all five counties pulled them all the way up. And look, they're almost the same all the way across. So this is important data for me to think about what do we need to do. When I started asking, were there health education programs that you talk to your grandparents? Oh yeah, they have diabetes. Yes, they've got cardiovascular disease. Are you doing health education programs for them? No, I don't think so. And because I have the opportunity of having nursing students that can develop programs for their activities, for their meetings, this is one of those things that we're, with a collaboration, trying to identify where those are. I looked at the characteristics of the grandparents. Have any of you worked with Area Agency on Aging? Okay, and this is some of the demographics that they collect. Also, in the middle of my data collection, they changed the tool. So I had data off the old tool and data off the new tool. But this is some of the things they ask. So I did have the opportunity to have some of the information, but again, there was a lot of missing information. Because of the voter status of the people there, the executive director strongly encourages them to become registered voters if they weren't already. And that process, if you haven't had to do it recently, you know, is more complicated than it used to be. So they make sure that they have the tools in place or even take them down to the courthouse where they can register. Citizen status, at this time, all of the participants are U.S. citizens. That is not a requirement. And at this time, all of them are English speaking. So that can make a little bit different for the needs of our students developing health education. They all, they did not all have a car, and some of this information was missing, like number of prescriptions, but yet we know the data on the area, and then we do have some health status on them. So the minors, when we looked at the minors, range in age from 2 to 18. I will tell you that some of the grandparents have children, and when I say grandchildren, that are 21 and 2 still living with them. So they actually may be feeding 5 mouths, but they only have one or two now that are below 18 because they've had these children for a decade. So it doesn't give a good overview of them when you're looking at totals unless you expand the total number that are there. Custody status, there is, some of them have legal custody, some of them have informal custody. Two sets have adopted the children, but because of cost issues with adoption, many of them have not been able to adopt their grandchildren. They also have with custody, some of the reasons why the children have left the home vary. And you may think the first thing that pops into your mind is maybe incarceration, mental health, but there are many other reasons for this particular group. We've had some family crisis and community crisis. We had a hurricane that came through 5 years ago, and there are two that still don't have the house that they were dwelling in that has that's inhabitable. So they will have weren't able to return with their parents, so they're living with the grandparent, although the parent is not with them. We did have some that were parents were incarcerated, that were experiencing the effects of HIV/AIDS. We've had cases of abuse, neglect, and domestic violence with the parent, intimate between partners, as well as to the child themselves. We've had maternal age at birth, some 13, 14, 15-year-olds that have given birth, so grandparents have taken care of those. Substance abuse and mental health. We've had extreme economic hardships were one of the reasons. We've had cancer death of a parent, and the other one was military deployment. We're in the area of a Army base, as well as an Air Force base an hour south of us, so we have had military deployment by one or both parents. And grandparents have then taken over that role. So the length of time varies between 1 year and 11 years that the minors have been with the grandparents. And when we tried to get a health history on the children, we found that that was missing in some of the data. The social workers take this information, and it is on a standard form, but they know some of the information, but they don't always know those other questions to ask whenever you see something that we as nurses know. So that's something that we will address with them. They say, oh yeah, he's got ADD, but we have no medicines, and we know he's on something. So we do have some information to share with them about recommendations for the future for that. So one of the things in the precede-proceed model is that you look over all this information, and so with the similarities and differences, I will give you some of this with the risk and the modifiable risk factors that we have. So whenever this aspect of the model, when you look at it, this is the area where changeability, that's what you're looking for, opportunities for change in this one. So you look at the factors to say, this one jumps out at me, I can work on this one. So you can work on one part or multiple aspects of it. So it's also where you can identify your objectives. Phase four has the predisposing, the enabling, and the reinforcing aspect of these, and this again is targets for change. So predisposing are things that whenever you're looking through that they would be present, and they may hinder your population and in that aspect, but they also may have the opportunity for change. So things that were there were, many of the children were appreciative that they were living with their grandparents. Some of them, as they were teenagers, may not have had that appreciation that they should have had. They do have the, they don't want to be anywhere where an adult is. They do have that common bond. It is a missed opportunity many times for kinship care to be fostered between them because they may think that this is only a temporary, and 11 years later, they're still living with grandma. So it really becomes a permanent. But it's also a time of motivation. So if you have a grandparent or a grandchild or a relative, it's that motivation, if it's present, predisposing, can be used for a positive way. The enabling part of this is one that you make possible for change to happen, so you can address new issues. Some of these are taught that volunteerism is important, but yet if you've not ever volunteered, you don't know how to do it. So they assist them in teaching them, what do you need to do to be a volunteer? How do you give back when you used to be the one that's been on the receiving end, and how important that is? Sometimes with enabling, just like learning how to be a voter, be a voter and to register for voting, how do you talk to your legislator? Okay, we groom that as nurses, but it can still be an intimidating process if you don't do it every day, at least my personal part, when I've had to learn that skill. Whenever you look through, they actually teach them how to do that, and then they meet with legislators. Reinforcing are things like attitudes, any other thing that they learn that can be positive. Implementation and then program evaluation, the next steps. And the constructs of these are policy, regulatory, organizational constructs, and educational environment development. That's a mouthful, but that's what PROCEED stands for. Just to give you an idea of the similarity and the differences, the age ranges in the Harrison County, when they reported, we had more 40-year-olds raising grandchildren, but yet we had 80-year-olds in Forest County. So when you're talking about developing health programs that would go across the span from 40 to 80, they're very different. Our races were different in different counties, and you can see that certain counties did have similarities to them, although when we looked at the statistics for the grandparents for the county, they did not match up. This was who they managed to get the information to. We had more that were single, although that sometimes when they reported things, they reported them three different ways. They could be widowed, they could be single, they could be separated on three forms. So they were inconsistent with the way they reported their information. They also, we found, called themselves retired if they had just stopped working, and not retired where you receive a pension. So they just weren't working anymore. We looked at the number of participations that they had, so they participated by counties. Smith County only had 14 people, but you can see they jumped right on out with having more in one year than another in Forest County, so we did it meetings per year over a five-year span. And they were trying to find out what were the factors that they came to participate, and we haven't been able to get that far yet in the data. So some of the participations may be social meetings that they have. And within those social meetings, you know, they laugh, they have things that are in common, they just talk about things with their children and things that they can empower themselves with. Some of the volunteer things that they do is that they walked in the diabetic walk, actually raised money for the diabetes walk. They do gleaning. When the fields are cleaned and the farmers have finished, they allow people to come in and pick the fields more, and they picked 450 pounds of sweet potatoes and I think 200 pounds of cabbage. They save 20% for themselves and give the rest to the food banks. So this is another one of those things they do. So recommendations for this, for overview, was to look at their record keeping, because it was not consistent across years and off forms. So now that we have a new form, we're going to go forward with that. We also, whenever we do it, the units of grandparents, sometimes couples were reported together, and sometimes they reported separately. So because of that, they realize now that they need to report them individually, especially for their reimbursement. They want to look at new program focuses and outcomes, and they want that health education program, because the grandparents are realizing that they're having some ongoing problems with their health, and they would like to know what they could do to improve that. It comes down to dollars and cents, so sometimes we have to work clean, work mean, so we've got to see what we need to do to make those things be the most cost-effective that we have, and we need to look up those further evaluation. We're trying to get some information on the national guidelines to see where we can be congruent for those. So right away, we're looking for those questionnaires for missing data, and we're going to. This was flat information off of forms. Our next step is to go to focus groups and see exactly which county wants what information, and we're going to record those anecdotal positive things that have come out of this to enhance not only other opportunities, but people to recruit other members. Looking for new grant opportunities. One's already come in since this study was finished, and waiting anxiously for the 2010 census data. So some of the health focuses for the future are looking at those health conditions, doing the education, developing outcomes, because those were not clearly developed at the beginning of the program. They start a program up with a good focus, but not with the end in mind. And so besides counting heads, now we have a different quality that we want to do for outcomes, and they're ready to look at those outcomes and develop them specifically for this. We are going to add a quality of life survey for the grandparents shortly, and because of all the many factors that the children were removed from the home and put with the relative, we are trying to see if we can consider to get an ACE, the Adverse Childhood Experience survey, to these children to see what risk factors now do they have more identified that we can do something about now early that will make a difference for their long-term health and their life expectancy. So don't underestimate the importance of having outcomes in place, that you need the objectives and a consistent method of counting. We've developed a logic model, so if you don't have one of those, to be able to do it, and intervals. So don't forget to ask your population of interest what they want. Thank you.